Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of two.
Well, welcome to another Kidney Talk episode. You know, I'm excited to talk about this guest today because I think music makes the world go around. And so today we're going to be talking to Eddie Z, a talented musician, director, and creator behind Charlotte's iconic music spaces, including the Playroom and the Vault. Eddie's journey goes far beyond music. He's also a fellow kidney transplant survivor, whose personal story of overcoming so many things, like so many of us, is now inspiring thousands of people. He's built a vibrant music community and helped share his unique perspective on creativity, healing, and the power of giving back. So welcome to the show, Eddie.
Thank you so much. It's always super cool to be able to share the journey with others and see if I can help some people with some perspective and just some vibrancy.
Well, and you know, I saw you play guitar on YouTube and I'm like, wow, you can bring it, man.
Well, thank you. That's my first love. I've been playing guitar since I'm 4 years old. It's all I ever wanted to do in my whole life. You know, some people grow up and they want to be a doctor, an engineer, an astronaut, or they don't know what they want to be in many cases. For me, it was really easy. From the time I could remember, I wanted to be a professional musician and a guitar player. And I was 12 years old when I saw Edward Van Halen for the first time. And I said, that, whatever that is, I want to do that. And I don't play anything like him, but he was sure an inspiration to me.
Wow. And did your parents and everything just support that love? Did they get you a guitar and say, here's all the guitars and music lessons you need? Or did you self-teach yourself?
Well, it was a little bit of both. They definitely, I was very hyperactive as a kid. So I was 4 years old when they got me my first amplifier and microphone. And they definitely supported it until they heard the racket that it would make. But having an older brother, 11 years older, and a sister, 10 years older, who were both somewhat musical, helped by the time I came along. It was something they pretty much embraced. So yeah, I was very fortunate in that they didn't fight me on it at all.
And now, are your brother and sister musicians too?
They're not. They were, you know, they were teenage into music teenage wise. My sister played the piano. Never as an adult. It was never a central part of their life like it was. I mean, for me, it was everything I lived and breathed was music.
Isn't that crazy? You probably can't walk into a restaurant without recognizing the beats and the music and everything else, right?
Yeah, it's a curse and a blessing.
I get it. You know, but sadly, living with kidney disease my whole life, I see kidneys everywhere. I mean, in pet, I'm like, oh, the rug has kidneys. Oh, the rug. Oh, my God, you know. So take us back a little bit to when you learned your kidneys were failing. And what did that actually feel like at the time?
Okay, so in 2012, I went for routine labs. I didn't feel bad. It was just a routine once or twice a year, I think, checkup. And I went for labs, and I was actually working with a Grammy Award winner in my studio, the Playroom, and I get a call from the doctor's office that basically says, you need to come in right now. And I'm like, yeah, I'm busy. You know, this is very important work I'm doing. I can't leave right now. And I kind of blew them off, and they called again. The doctor called instead of the nurse and said, yeah, you really need to come in. And again, I blew them off. I didn't take it very seriously. And I called my wife, who was a nurse. And she said to me, hey, have they ever called you before and told you to come in? I was like, nope. She goes, well, then go in. So I did. And essentially, I went from zero to dialysis. I had no idea that anything was wrong with me. This doctor got pretty much in my face and said, your life as you know it is over and you're going to start dialysis. And in my bravado, first of all, I had no idea what dialysis was. I didn't even know they were like, you need to see a nephrologist. I'm like, what's that? I don't know what that is. I had zero warning, zero experience. It didn't run in my family. I had never heard these terms before. And I had to play a show that was, I had to play a show that afternoon in front of 20,000 people at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
And what was the diagnosis? Did he say you have high potassium?
They just told me, you know, I'm not sure that I knew because I didn't understand. I didn't know what to ask. I think they told me that my kidneys had failed. My creatinine, which I didn't know what that was sky high. And in my bravado, I was like, well, what if I don't start dialysis Monday? And they're like, no, you'll be dead in 8 days. And that was my wake up call.
Wow. And so you didn't perform to the 20. I knew it. Yeah, I absolutely did.
And it's I've probably played close to 1,000 shows in my life. And it was the first time I ever appeared on stage in shorts because I didn't have the energy to change clothes.
Wow.
But yes, I went on stage and I played. And Monday, that was Friday. And that Monday morning, they placed a port and I started dialysis.
Wow. So they put a vascular access catheter in your chest, right?
That's exactly correct. Yeah.
And so at that point, what was going on with your family and your mind? And I mean, you know, it's interesting that a doctor says, as you know, your life, it's over, which I would take offense with that. I would say, wait a minute, you know, that's not a good introductory into another level of care. You might want to rethink how you say those words, but how did it, you know, when you got to the nephrologist and to the unit and, you know, how did that all change your mental toll?
Well, it's a two-part answer. That particular nephrologist who told me that and I didn't get along very well, he actually went to my wife and asked my wife to calm me down and for me to be less aggressive. And she's like, good luck. And then I went to the dialysis unit my first day and someone recognized me there for my career. And all they wanted to do was talk about the records that I had produced and the artists that I had worked with. And I'm so terrified. All I'm trying to do is not die. I'm trying to take it all in. Again, I went zero to a dialysis machine. So it wasn't a good fit in the first clinic. And I recognized that. And I changed doctors almost immediately. And I changed clinics within one or two treatments. And I got to another clinic that was, albeit say, much more professional, much less interested in my music career and much more interested in getting me through this nightmare that I was, you know, from zero to 100, you know, overnight.
Right.
My family, I'm not even sure. Honestly, I'm not even sure I told my family anyone other than my wife. It was very private. And I didn't go public with it for a year. I was still playing shows, sick as I could be. And it wasn't until I really realized that I needed a kidney transplant that I was strong enough to take this public and tell the world that I needed help.
And, you know, it was back in 2011, right? Did this happen?
It was 2012 that I was diagnosed. And I spent 2 years on dialysis before I got a donor. And I was blown away at how little information I had access to about kidney disease, about dialysis. Like, it was like nobody knew of this silent killer, while cancer and heart disease got so much more funding. It kind of blew my mind. Like, one of the things the doctor said to me when I went into dialysis the first time was, he said, you're not going to see anyone that looks like you. And I think what he meant by that is the majority of the people that I was in dialysis with, they just weren't white middle-aged guys, at least in the dialysis unit that I was in. And what I learned was that it's a severely underserved community with very little information. And that became like a marching order for me was, I got to get some more eyes on this. I have to do what I can to raise awareness from these people because they don't have a voice and no one's listening to them.
This brings me to another point. You know, it always seems to be when something happens with people, it's the patient's fault. And it's because they don't know, you know, they just don't know the answer. And I think that it's important to just say that. If you don't know, it's better to hear that than to make up a reason.
You know, I have read a lot about dialysis patients where they felt like they were blamed.
Right.
And I have to say that I never encountered that. In my personal experiences, I'm sure I got very lucky. I had amazing doctors, especially after all my issues. I was never faced with someone pinning it on me.
So you didn't feel the guilt. Like there's sometimes a lot of guilt.
I never did.
Well, what was, can I ask, what was the cause of your kidney failure?
So two biopsies later, they were never able to tell me. I wasn't diabetic. I didn't have high blood pressure. Admittedly, I was overweight, but they were never able to tell me. To this day, they can't tell me why.
Oh, so you're one of those rare people. You got some kind of rare disease they don't know about yet, probably.
You couldn't have nailed that more. And it got even weirder for me after my transplant. In 2014, my wife was my kidney donor, which is just statistically pretty amazing, as you know. And I didn't even know she applied.
Oh, wow.
I came home from work one day and she said, hey, we're a match. And I was like, of course we are. We're doing great. We've been together 10 years. You know, we're plugging along. She's like, no, I'm going to be your donor. And I was like, what are you talking about? I had no idea.
Wow. So she was doing that behind the scenes for you.
She was doing it while I was at dialysis and while I was playing shows. It took her 6 months to go through the testing process.
And she didn't tell you?
Never told me a word.
Now, were you looking for a kidney at that time?
I was. I had, in 2013, I went public on the radio show that I was affiliated with, which reached 350,000 people a day. And I sort of used it as a platform to raise awareness for kidney disease. And all of a sudden, the Charlotte hospitals, it was, you know, pre-doing it electronically. They were sending out all these donation packs and they had no idea why. And nothing really hit. Nothing came to fruition. And then, like I said, my wife told me, we're a match. And it blew my mind. Like, if I hadn't been really close to death at that time, I was not doing well on dialysis. I had all kinds of problems. My organs were starting to fail. If I wasn't as bad off as I was, I probably would have told her no. Her perspective was amazing, really. My family, after the fact, you know, thanked her. And she said, you know what? I'm just being selfish. And we were all like, what are you talking about? And she said, we have such a great life together. I don't want to lose it.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, I hear that story a lot.
Wow.
And that's love. I mean, that's love. I mean, it's what you hear among many donors that, you know, they want to help and they can help and they do help. I mean, I'm just curious now. How did you meet?
we met on the internet.
Oh, okay.
We met on eHarmony. Mm-hmm. We've been together almost 23 years.
Oh, wow.
She was the first person I went out on a date with in eHarmony. And I think we moved in together within 2 weeks after that, and we haven't left each other's side since.
Now, is she a musician?
Not a bit. Well, let me rephrase that. She played cello in college, okay. But she's a nurse. Her superpower is she's a caregiver.
Oh, wow.
She's exceptional at it. So she understood music. She understood my drive and my career, and she came to a bunch of shows. And she had such positive vibe and she was so secure that even when we were playing shows in front of 10, 15,000 people and it got really crazy and she never fazed her.
Well, yeah, you had probably a lot of groupies hanging around you.
So our draw was 75% female.
Okay.
So it was really crazy and it never once fazed her. And I would get off stage and I would sign autographs and do all the stuff I was contractually obligated to do. And we had hotel rooms and I'd be like, yeah, y'all stay. I'd jump in a car and run home to my wife as fast as I can. So I live in Florida and I still have to go to Charlotte, you know, where my studio is. And to this day, I drive there, work, and drive back on the same day because I don't want to be away from my wife.
Oh, well, that's just a lovely, lovely story. That's a whole other story.
That's the truth.
Rockstar is faithful to his his wife at every decade.
You know, she's blessed me with the best life I could ever have dreamed of. I get asked a lot in business interviews and stuff, you know, why, how have you been so successful and maintain this career for, it's over 32, 33 years. And I always said, give the same answer. When your home life is stable, when your foundation is solid and it's not an area of concern, it frees you up to dive into all the things that take up space in your brain. So not that we don't work at our relationship. We absolutely work at it hard every day. But because I know she has my back and she knows I have hers, it just leaves a lot of space to do really productive things other than fight.
No, I 100% agree with that. And so how has your music helped you in the healing from all of this dialysis transplant? Transplant's still a cure. It still has its ups and downs. I mean, it's not a silver bullet.
I think I have to clarify. In 2014, when I was transplanted, I thought I was golden. When Vicky gave me her kidney, I thought I was home free, and I didn't know that that was just the beginning of my drama. I had all kinds of problems. I had one in a million drug interaction. I ended up being allergic to cyclosporin, so I had SIPs before they even knew what SIPs was.
Wow.
I had five more surgeries at Duke after my first transplant to correct a ureter that was bent, and I had a psoas hitch. So I thought when I was transplanted, I hit a home run, but I wasn't really healthy or capable until 2 years after the transplant because of all the drama that I went through. And in terms of music, I was still playing. Like I was sitting, I couldn't hold a guitar, but I was sitting on my couch with a guitar and a stand and I was playing. Facebook was huge for me because my band had such a big following and I had all this positive energy being sent to me. And I wasn't sharing everything that I was going through because it was really hard and personal, but I was sharing like the broad strokes, the, hey, this hasn't really gone like we thought.
Right.
So the community was tremendous to me. And then when I was actually able to get on stage again, we did a Eddie Z comeback show. And we sold out, like 5,000 people came and they made t-shirts and it was a big, the Kidney Foundation was there and my doctors were there. And so music and the music community, the audience and my fellow musicians were tremendous, tremendous part of my healing. I can't even overstate that. They gave me strength and they gave me power and I couldn't give up.
Well, and it's so interesting you say that because it gave you purpose. And I think a lot of times when people are sick and they have to kind of change or take a break, they lose their identity, you know, because it's so much of their identity. And sometimes we have to have other people remind us that we are needed.
Lori, let me tell you a quick story about how important music was to me and how important guitar playing was to me. So, as I told you, when they first did dialysis, they put a chest cath in, and then they wanted to place access in my arm, right?
Right.
And I had done some research about this, and I found out that there was something called Steel syndrome.
Right.
That once they cut into your arm, there's a very high chance that your fingers are going to go numb, and you're going to lose sensation in your fingers. So I refused. So I said, what other options are there? And they said, well, if you really want to push the envelope, we can put access in your groin. And I said, great, let's do that. And they're like, number one, you got to find a surgeon who's willing to do that as the first stop, because it's usually the right stop. And then secondly, you're going to have to sign a release that says, you understand this could lead to amputation.
Right.
Great, no problem. I'll sign it because I'd rather live with one less leg than not be able to play guitar.
Right.
And so I never had an access put into my arms. It was put into my groin. And I went through 2 years of dialysis getting stuck in my groin. And let me tell you, that's not for the faint of heart.
I know. Well, you know, that's the only place they put an access when I was a kid. They put it in my right leg, upper leg, because I was only 22 pounds. And it was, you know, I don't recall it, but I still have that big ass scar there.
Yeah, me both.
But it's, you know, and the groin is a direct line to your femoral veins. So, and did they take that out now that you're transplanted? They're just leaving it?
Nope. It's been dead since 2015 or 16.
Oh, okay.
But I have a huge lump there. And every time I take a shower, I remember.
Yes.
I remember. And then I was just transplanted again in 2024. Vicky's kidney, they told me going in, you know, it's undersized. You have huge body mass difference. It may not last long. I got 10 years out of it, and I felt very blessed to. And in 2024, I knew that I was failing again. And you talk about what impact music had. So I went on Facebook and I said, well, folks, I'm headed for dialysis again. And I need a kidney transplant. This was May of 2024. And lo and behold, a kid that I had signed an autograph for when he was 8 years old as a 21-year-old male became my donor and saved my life.
Oh, my God. That's wild. Does he play guitar?
He doesn't. He was just a huge fan of my band and what we did. And his parents had been taking him to our shows his whole life. And when he became a consenting adult, he saw the post. He contacted Duke. And I was transplanted in November 11th of 2024. I mean, it went fast. I'm so lucky and blessed. It's hard to even put into words.
What's your creatinine today, may I ask?
0.89.
Okay. Mine's 0.9 today. So we'll take it, right? We'll take it.
So I just went for labs today. I still go every 30 days. And every time it comes back and it is what it is. And I thank the Lord. I do.
It's amazing. Well, I can't wait to hear you play. So is there some places that people can listen to you play, like a website or...
Yeah, so there's actually a movie coming out. I spent 20 years in a band called Charity Case. Everything we did, we gave away to terminally ill and chronically handicapped children. We gave away $1.2 million. And there's a movie coming out about my life and kidney disease in Charity Case, and it's called Charity Case the Movie. And if you go to charitycasethemovie.com, there's a bunch of clips up there. The movie premiered 10 weeks ago in Paris. To a standing ovation. It plays April 10th in India. And if all goes well by the end of this week, I'm going to sign a national a worldwide distribution deal. So the best place to go is charitycasethemovie.com. Also, I have a lot of releases on iTunes as Eddie Z, E-D-D-I-E, and just the letter Z. I have a solo record out called Together in the Vault that features about 3 different Grammy Award winners on it. And I've produced about 600 records. So if you poke around the internet, you're going to find clips of me playing.
Okay. Well, that's pretty exciting. And what are you planning in the future?
So my next move is I'm going to go back to Europe, where I spend a lot of time. And I've been lucky enough to work with an Italian pop star. And I'm spending a lot of time in Turin, Italy, working with an artist who wants to sound more American. And I'm like, I know how to do that. I can help you with that. We will be leaving within the next week for Europe for 3 months. And I have a lot of friends and connections there. I'll be working on a record. Cooking is my other passion. Food is my other passion. And I've been able to cook in about 30 different countries. So it's all kind of related. I have to be creative.
I get that.
I'm a creative guy. And if I'm not creating, I'm not in a good mental space. So,
well, and I totally understand that on so many levels, because I crave, it's like a drug. It uh-huh. really is. It's a drug, and I want to live in that space. And I do a lot of different things, and it's such a great tool for coping. It really is, because it can take you away from your pain, your sorrows, and everything else, and you make something beautiful out of it. You got to come out to LA and see our Studio Hope Boutique that I created to build a community. And you got to come play. We have musicians there. I don't know if we have enough space for all your people, but we get about 30, 40 people in there. So you know, but I have a musician coming up next week.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's just very fun. I love live music. There's nothing that takes the place of live music.
And Laura, you'll appreciate this. One of the biggest, or actually the biggest hurdle that I had of leaving the country was that I'm on Belatacept, which is an infusion that has to be given every 30 days. And I was not able to get Belatacept outside the United States. I've been working on it for a year. And finally, I was able to arrange an infusion in Lisbon after having to get a waiver from the Portuguese government. We were laughing. You know, I'm working with Duke and I'm working with Mayo Clinic, you know, big companies that couldn't arrange this for me. And it literally took a year. But once again, if you stick with it and you stick with it and you stick with it, we were able to pull it off. And I'm not sure if I'll be the first American to ever get Belatacept in Europe, but I know that I will be the first American to ever get Belatacept in Lisbon.
Wow. Well, you should check in with us when you're getting that infusion.
I would be more than happy to. I would be more than happy to.
Well, Eddie, it's been a real pleasure. I hope you make it to LA and look us up. I mean, we, you know, we have a lot of musical entertainment in the area, as you know, but I'm sure they would love to hear your story and also hear your unique perspective and tunes, because I know your history dives into your music. That's channeled.
It's all related, Lori. Hey, thank you for giving me the time. I have to tell you that from the first time you and I spoke, you have been an inspiration to me. I'm amazed at what you've gone through and what you've built, and kudos to you. I think it's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you. And I hope we meet soon. I hope our paths cross soon.
All right, Lori. Take care.
You have a great day and safe travels to Europe or Italy. Italy.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.